Movers, shakers, makers. What makes creative people tick, and how do they find and develop their inspiration? Welcome to the podcast that draws back the curtain on the inventive mind and its artistic process. I'm Emma Lister. Today I'm talking to Zoe Ash Brown, the Dublin-born dancer who's worked with English National Ballet, Theatre Voorpommern, and now the Royal Ballet of Flanders, which under the directorship of Sidi Larbi-Cherkawi has expanded its classical repertoire to involve more contemporary pieces and new ways of working, occasionally involving task-based work, where dancers take a greater role in generating the steps. In 2016, she embarked on a parallel choreographic career, creating works for the short film Ballet Oha Clia, directed by Howard Jones, as well as the pieces Us and Flux, performed by the National Ballet of Ireland and the Royal Ballet of Flanders, respectively. This summer, an expanded version of Us should have been performed by the National Ballet of Ireland for their run at Edinburgh Festival Fringe, but has been cancelled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. I spoke to her in the spring of 2020. So this month you were listed as one of the 30 most promising artists under 30. In the article, they mention the cruel nature of ballet, or at least ballet training, and they use the word persevered about you. And I just wondered if you felt like you had persevered something or if your experiences were cruel.
Yeah, the 30 under 30 list was published about 2 weeks ago in the Irish Times in the Sunday supplement. And it was really strange to see a photo that they'd used that had been taken maybe 4 months ago, and then to read a quote that I had said in 2013 beside it, because I worked for the National Ballet of Ireland as a dancer and then very recently as a choreographer. They tend to mail me a lot to contribute to their artistic supplements, which is why I'd already done an interview a few years ago. And at the time I was facing what I can only describe as maybe close to a burnout. I felt very deflated. At the time, I was really passionate about leaving London. I definitely just felt like I wasn't in a very good headspace. So actually, when I did do that interview, they must have interpreted the sense that I was feeling. And so, yeah, I would have to say, yes, I did. I did persevere through something, because I feel like a lot of that difficult time that I faced was due to the fact that I wasn't able to really separate myself very well from my work. I definitely am massively insecure oftentimes, not all the time, but I do go through phases of feeling insecure. And I felt like I could have been better equipped during my training to better deal with different characters, different people. I think that there needs to be reform in our industry in how people attain jobs in managerial positions and directorship positions. I'm not afraid to say that. And in 2013, I was working for someone who I feel needed more training when it came to dealing with people and interpersonal relationships and communication skills. And I think that unfortunately in our industry, if you've had a very illustrious career as a performer, that kind of gives you a gateway straight in as a manager of people, a director of people, a director of organizations. And I don't think that's right, because the two don't make sense, you know. The career that you've had up until that point does not prepare you then, I'd feel, for being a wonderful director oftentimes.
I guess if you have to train to be a teacher, maybe you need to have to train to be a director as well, including a bit of HR. Certainly throughout your career as a dancer, you've been in a lot of, you know, your typical big story ballets like Swan Lake and Manon and Carmen, as well as newer stuff like there's a new Anna Karenina you were in, and more recently a reworking of La Bayadere, I believe, called Rasa. I wondered in your own choreographic work whether you were drawn to telling stories or whether you were repelled by the fact that you'd spent so much of your career storytelling.
I love narrative work, and I would definitely be drawn to choreographing to convey a message and a story. At the moment, I'm very much in the emerging stages of my career, so as a choreographer, And so I am afraid of narrative work. I really am. I try to approach, at the moment I'm trying to work with themes. So I try to get a sense of something across, whether it's an emotion or it's an intention. But I have to say, I think that tackling narrative work in a different way is really, really brave and really difficult to do through the medium of dance. And I really take my hat off to people that are trying, especially full lengths. And so in my own choreographic work, I'm really lucky right now that I'm able to make pieces for things like choreographic platforms. And I have a wonderful relationship with Anne Marr, who's the director of the National Ballet of Ireland. And she's allowing me to stage work that I've already made in a very comfortable space with dancers that I know very well. And then I restage it on her dancers, which is wonderful. And those pieces that I'm working on now have a theme, but they're short. And so I would love to build up to making a story with narrative. So baby steps.
In Flux, you interviewed your father for part of the soundscape, which makes me think that there was maybe an intensely personal aspect to it. Is that the case?
That actually came about very accidentally, if I'm being honest. I was in the living room with my dad, and I had just tried and failed to get some funding to make Flux. And so I was gifted a free studio space by Dance Ireland, which is a space that I'm very, very grateful to in Dublin. And so they gave me a week of studio space just completely for free. And I was paying the dancers out of my own pocket. And my dad just wanted to know why, you know, what is this piece and why do you feel so strongly about it? And I just said, I just think it's... It was about change, but it also ties in with the theme of immigration. And I just thought it was really important because I was seeing a lot of it in my everyday life, people being really resistant to change. And it was also, I suppose it was personal in that I was realizing that year that I'm horrible dealing with change. I don't like it very much at all. And it makes me feel insecure and scared if it's not completely on my own terms, which was what I wanted the piece to be about, that if you surrender to the fact that you don't maybe have any control or very little anyway, that once you know that, that you'll feel a lot better. And so I was telling my dad about it, and he just really went off on a tangent about his career in business. And it was beautiful because he has a horrible memory, and just suddenly all these memories were coming back, however the conversation had gone. It just jogged a lot for him. And so my partner, Dom, was sat beside me, and he turned on his voice memos in his phone and started recording my dad without my dad knowing. And yeah, it had to make it into the piece because I just thought it was beautiful. The way his thoughts were coming out so organically, the dynamic of the voice, as you could hear the thoughts, you know, coming together really gradually. I thought it was really lovely. And also his sentiment, what he was saying in it, I thought was beautiful. And so I just took a short snippet and I said, okay, that has to be the opening for the piece. And and I was very naughty. I didn't even tell him until he came to watch the show.
You didn't tell him?
I didn't tell him. No. And my mother turned to him and said, whose voice is that? After 47 years of being together, she didn't even recognize his voice. It's very sweet. And I'm really happy that I used it because... yeah, I think he has a beautiful way with words.
That I could have no influence on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to embrace it, and you've got to accept that it's part of life.
Yeah.
Maybe, here's the thought. Mm-hmm. I don't know where this came from, because I have no creative bones in my body. But change is constant. Mm-hmm. Change, like we set out to do a certain thing, mm-hmm. and then something comes along, and we have to change.
So directly after we hear your dad's voice, there's a section where your three dancers are sat on chairs in a row, and they begin very simple gestural arm movements, and sometimes they're in unison and sometimes they're in a canon, and it kind of ripples back and forth. And given that we've just heard your dad speaking, I can't help thinking that it's symbolic of a generational passing of the torch, or ways in which history influences our family from top to bottom or bottom to top, especially considering you're dealing with themes of change and immigration. And I was just wondering what was on your mind when you made that section.
Well, I would love to work up to a triptych of work based on the theme of immigration and change. And I wanted Flux to be my second work. in the triptych. And the first one that I made was Us, which is a piece that was staged on the National Ballet of Ireland. And I put a bench on stage and I had everyone sat because I loved the idea of it symbolising a place of transition. They're kind of separate but together. So I just felt like it left a massive room for interpretation. Are these strangers in a waiting room waiting for terrible or wonderful news? Are they at a bus stop or a train station? Are they in the airport arrivals waiting for someone to come home? You know, how many things could it be? I love what you saw in it, though, because that actually wasn't my intention, if I'm being completely honest. I also wanted to put the three chairs together because I also wanted it to symbolise maybe the pattern of every day where you have your daily routine and you get up and you brush your teeth and then you eat your breakfast and then you get on transport to get to your place of work. And for me anyway, I did it so many times in London. I had so many stops to go in London. I remember thinking, what if I just like got off at Maida Vale and just like walked around a park and just called in sick today and just, you know, and I would really, it was such a strong thought. And I remember thinking I would come up to like a nice stop that I would think, I'd love to get off there. Maybe I'll get off. Do you know what? I'm going to get off and I'm going to pull a sickie. And I never did. And I always went to work. And so, yeah, the chairs for me just symbolize so much. And I just love having that theme running through all three pieces. I still have yet to work on the third piece, of course. But I like that moment of sitting because it just leaves so much room for interpretation.
So was that something that you would have prepared before you went into the studio? Because you made Flux after you made Us.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So going in on day four or whatever, did you know that you were going to be working on that section or did it come to you in the moment?
Oh, I knew that I was going to have chairs in Flux, and I got an absolute rinsing from all my friends, you know. Oh, we're sat down again, are we? You know, and people... people were very resistant to it when we first started.
It's
and
a theme, guys.
Yeah, exactly. And there was lots of jokes and there was lots of, yeah, I mean, I had to really stick to my guns. But I knew that it was going to be in the piece for sure.
Do you normally task in the studio? How do you work with dancers?
It depends on who you've asked to work with. For instance, I was talking to a dancer friend who's in a more classical company, and I was really kind of shocked. I was taken aback by her approach. She was in a creation with a female choreographer for a contemporary piece that the company is going to premiere, I think, once this pandemic is lifted. And she was just so incensed at being given a task. You know, she said, it's not choreography, you know, tell me what to do. I'm just not here to be made to feel like that. It's not my job to make your steps. And I thought that was an amazing reaction. It's something that I have to respect, of course. And I understand completely if you haven't had the experience of creation and task making. I was quite surprised, I have to say, because it is just so beautiful what comes out of people's bodies naturally. I mean, I only move a very certain specific way. And if all of my work was based on my own movement vocabulary, I would never watch it. I just wouldn't want to. I would have no interest. So yeah, I love task work, but it really depends on the people. So for Flux, for instance, I was working with two dancers who would be really used to creation, but I did not have the time. And I didn't want to waste any of their precious time because our timetable was so packed. And so I would write down every single step. I would make it with Dom, who's my partner, beforehand. And then I would come in and I would know, okay, we're getting a minute and 20 done today. And I would just go bam, bam, bam. And they were quite sad that was how we created the piece. I mean, they really enjoyed it and they were so lovely. But they said themselves, they were like, oh, we really could have done some creation for you at some point. But I just did not have the time and I didn't want to risk it because... creation is only wonderful when you have time, lots of time. Because if you've got an hour and a half and nothing gets done, I mean, you've wasted, yeah. No, there's nothing wasted, but if you have a deadline, then yeah, you really need to make a structure, a plan.
Talking about your friend who's a classical dancer in a company being asked to task and being slightly aghast, I think that's probably happening in a lot of companies because increasingly the line between a classical company and a contemporary company is blurring. So the demands on certainly classical ballet dancers, they're getting in a contemporary choreographer like Akram Khan, like Crystal Pite. Some of them might have a classical background, but, you know, the vast majority of their work has been, you know, creating on contemporary dancers. So they're coming into classical companies and they're introducing this new way of working to dancers. And I wonder if your friend might have been more open to it if she'd done a little bit of it in school, perhaps, or had a little workshop beforehand.
Absolutely. And I'm being completely honest, you know, there's a massive stigma attached to ballet dancers trying to move. because we haven't had the experience, and it is really, really obvious, and it's a very confronting place to be, and it's, you know, you've been thrown massively out of your comfort zone. And, you know, forgive me, I'm going to come for the contemporary dancers right now. Guys, you're absolutely amazing, but such hypocrites, because you go into these creation workshops, and I mean, we did 2 weeks of creation with Raza. No, we did many weeks of creation, but we did 2 weeks of workshopping so that he could get a cast together, the choreographer, who's Daniel Prieto. Lovely Argentinian choreographer. And he gave us total and complete freedom. And the ethos of the whole thing was, you know, no judgment. And they always tell us in Flanders, like when we're creating, no judgment. And I'm thinking, that's a lie. That's a flat out lie. There is so much judgment. And if you're a more classical dancer and you're making stuff, it's nowhere on a par with someone who's been doing it since they started dance training, you know. And you don't have lots of interesting ideas, and you don't know where your body can go, and you don't know how to play with your weight, or it takes a different way of thinking and approaching, and you need to be given the time to discover that. And so I really think that, like, classical companies, I mean, the thing is, there is no time, you know. We are fighting against the clock, you know. People have to perform, we have to be prepared to do the shows that they're doing. But in an ideal world with lots and lots of money, it would be lovely if a very classical company who is about to go into creation could be given 3 weeks of just putting on their tracksuit bottoms, covering up their frame so they don't have to look at it anymore, and just learning very slowly how to move, you know, in kind of maybe a principled in Gaga technique or something, so they can kind of feel a bit more comfortable in that environment. Because if you're not comfortable, then forget it, you know, you're not going to enjoy creating, and then it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare for everyone, you know.
It seems with all the different choreographers you work with, you can kind of collect little tools.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of what I wouldn't do, what I would do. I'm so privileged, honestly. Being in Flanders, it's such a privilege. The only thing that's a shame is that sometimes, you know, there's 40 dancers, and a lot of the time we get very niche, small pieces to perform. So there might be a cast of 6 or 8, and then you got 40 people, you know, elbows out, doing what we can. And of course, you're not going to get to work with everyone and do everything, which is completely fine. But it's a wonderful place to work. It's so different. It turns into, it's almost like being a freelancer, but you're stationed somewhere. So every production, every choreographer is a whole different ballgame. And so far, the last season and a half, of course, because we're, you know, taking a very abrupt halt, have been really, really insightful, really enriching. And yeah, I'm so lucky, very, very lucky.
You've worked in a big company like Flanders, but you've also worked as a freelancer, and you've worked for small companies and medium companies. And I just wondered what you thought was the most challenging for you.
They all pose different challenges. If I'm being completely honest, there was such a comfort of being in a small company, and I miss it in a way, because I miss the sense of importance that you had, you know, as one of 12. You really have your place, you know, your director, and especially in small companies, oftentimes they'll be the ones that do most of the creations. So they will really get a sense of all of their dancers individually. And so, yeah, your strengths can be catered towards. Your strengths can be, you know, yeah, nurtured. They'll know your casting very well. They'll know what to do. I mean, you also maybe run the risk of being pigeonholed, but it's really, you know, I found it very nice and very, very comforting to know that, yeah, my director knows me. He knows that I react really well to narrative work. In English National Ballet, I really struggled with being one of many, because, and I really have to say, I have the utmost respect for anyone that has a career in the court of ballet of a large company, because you are doing 70% of the work, and you will only really get spoken to if you did something wrong most of the time. So you could do 11 shows to a brilliant high level, you know, your best work, and no one will say a thing because you're just doing your job.
It occurred to me, you know, if you haven't been in a vocational ballet school or a ballet company studio, it is expected to be dead quiet, very military-like, and you basically move when they tell you to move, and you do not move when they tell you not to move. It cannot be a democracy. You can't get a large production together if you run a rehearsal, a 90-minute rehearsal, as a democracy with everyone pitching in their ideas. Unfortunately, you know, the structure of ballet is such that you need to kind of do what one or two people say at the front of the room. There's a lot of press recently about the lack of female choreographers. And is this because they are not visible, or is it because they are not coming up through the ranks? Is it because we're not encouraging them to come up through the ranks? And it occurred to me that perhaps there's something in what we were speaking about earlier about conforming that doesn't really encourage the creative mind of particularly the classical, let's say the classical ballet dancer who's a woman. And I just wondered, you spoke about being crippled by insecurity earlier. I wondered how it was that you decided to start on a choreographic career.
Well, actually, my choreography started out really accidental. I made a piece back in 2014. And if I'm being really, really frank, it was because I was freelancing at the time and there was an available award from the Arts Council. And it was to, the award was to buy people time and space to engage with their choreographic practice. And yeah, it was available. I fit the criteria. I had months free in my schedule. And I thought maybe this is a really wonderful opportunity to give it a go. And if I had the resources to pay people properly, you know, that's kind of the ideal environment to create in, because people don't have to worry about running to a shift or the fact you don't have to be concerned about the fact that people are doing you a favor for the whole period. So I thought this would be a really comfortable way to try and see if I could do this. And so I got the award and we did our 2 weeks and it was so much fun. But I was, that experience, I was just so consumed with self-doubt. I thought, this is just awful. They hate it. What am I doing? You know, and everyone was so nice. I couldn't have picked nicer dancers and, you know, more supportive people. But nevertheless, I was just so in my head. I mean, there was one day I remember I was lying down on the floor and I think I sent you guys home at 2 when we all went for a burger. Like, I just couldn't even think. I could not even think straight. And then Howard came in, who is the director of Ballet Auclea. And I said, could you just film it for me? Because I want to send it back. If the Arts Council ask, you know, what we've been up to, I would like to have a little archive that's of good quality. And he just seemed blown away. And it was just so humbling and so lovely, you know, that he really enjoyed it and he enjoyed being in the studio. And he saw it from a totally different perspective. And he found elements of it that were really interesting. And then off the back of that, he asked if we would do Ballet Auclea together. And then, you know, we did Ballet Auclea. And at that point, I was working in Germany and I had a little bit more experience in creation and task work. And so I was a little happier with the work that then I produced then. And then, you know, another couple of years down the line, I had more experience under my belt with tasking. And I thought, okay, maybe I could actually do this. I'm really inspired to create now because I felt like I understand the structure of creation more. But it was only through task work. Like I really do not understand how women in a classical company then create. I really don't know how they do it. I find it truly extraordinary and I take my hat off to them, because without the experience of being in creation as a dancer and being given task after task, I wouldn't even know where to begin, honestly. And so if I didn't have the career path that I had, I wouldn't have gone into choreography out of a ballet company. No way.
Is there a piece that you saw or read or listened to that changed everything for you?
I have to say it was a piece that I saw. So I was 18 and I was in English National Ballet School, and my very good friend, Dermot O'Mara, I think he gets referenced in every interview that I ever do. He was in Central School of Ballet at the time that I was studying at English National Ballet School. And he was working at the Sadler's Wells bar on a Saturday night and Sunday. Fair play to him. I don't know how he did it. The whole way through his training. And there was one night when he said to me, Zoe, I have a ticket, but I actually have to work. I think he had to work, or there was something. He couldn't make it, but he would get these really cheap tickets to Sadler's. And he said, it's for NDT, Netherlands Dance Theatre. I'd never heard of it. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go. And he said, you should go. They're fabulous. There's a girl who's Irish in the company, Sarah Reynolds. She was in the company for years and years. And he was like, really, you should go. And so I remember like getting some snacks and I left school after the day, and I went down to Sadler's, and I was just mouth agog. They performed a Killian triple bill. My mind was blown, and I talked about it for weeks and weeks and weeks with my friends afterwards in ballet school. And I was thinking to myself, do I even want to be a ballet dancer? Like, I mean, of course, everyone wants to do the NDT. But I remember thinking, that's what I want to do, you know? Screw the point shoes. It was amazing. And so after that, I just became really obsessed with Yuri Killian. And then obviously you do your research online. And then through that, I discovered more and more choreographers. But yeah, that show, I remember it so vividly. And unfortunately, I cannot remember what the pieces were called. But I remember the sonography and the mood. And it was just, oh, yeah. And the caliber of dance and everything. It was just amazing.
Amazing that though you'd already chosen dance as your profession, you kind of re-chose it after seeing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. And is there a piece that you might not have loved as much as a Yuri Killian triple bill, but that you learned from? Maybe it was a noble failure. Maybe when you saw it, you didn't like it, but you found yourself thinking about it a year later.
So this is a slightly ambiguous answer, I would say, but it's actually a lot of different forms and genres and styles of contemporary dance. And I think this actually stems from being in, you know, a very strict ballet school and not having exposure to things that weren't completely aesthetically driven and that required massive amounts of stamina and line and all of these things that I just thought were a given to equal a professional acclaimed piece of dance art. And it really isn't the case, and I'm really grateful for the path that my career took, because it really opened my mind not only to what I want to view as a spectator, but also what I actually want to perform as well. So I really have to be totally honest and say, yeah, when I was a student and even as a young professional dancer, I really wanted to see straight knees, pointed feet, yeah, contemporary dance, only if it looked a very specific way. And so I disregarded a lot of really, really beautiful work because it just didn't come under my umbrella of what I considered to be high-end dance. And yeah, I'm slightly ashamed just to admit it, but I can now see the light. So there you go.
Is there an artist you'd like to nominate for us all to check out?
Yes, he is a dancer, and I think you pronounce his name James Van Pham. He is in the Akram Khan company. I have never met him, so I am really fangirling right now. He worked very briefly in Ballet Flanders as a guest. He worked with Cedar Larbishikari, my director. And so a lot of the dancers here know him very well and speak very fondly of him. And through all of that, I ended up looking him up on social media. And he's an extraordinary dancer. He really is just, it's just very rare to have that level of articulation throughout your whole body and to have so much control and to allow it to give you so much freedom. I just think it's so beautiful. So whenever I'm feeling like I need some kind of movement inspiration, I look up his Instagram, because honestly, he's something very special. So I would look him up online.
You can see that dancer's Instagram at James Vuan. That's at JAMESVUANH. And Zoe's at Zoe Ashbrown_choreography. Her choreographer's website is www.zoeashbrown.com. Okay, closing credits. This has been a Makeshift Company production. Follow us on Instagram at Makeshift Company, or check out our website, makeshiftcompany.com, where there is a link to the podcast website for show notes. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Also, if you rate and review the show, it would be most appreciated. Thanks for listening. And now, from the cutting room floor, I give you...
You know, your Yuri Killian might be someone else's... I'm not going to name a bad choreographer.
But we all get the idea.
Yeah, indeed.